It was 20 years ago this past summer that Harry Potter burst onto the scene and became an instant phenom and pop icon. In the two decades since, the 7-volume series has sold more than 500 million copies, making it the best-selling series of books in all time. Only the Bible has sold more copies. And the film adaptations are second only to Star Wars in gross sales for a film series. In the first book, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, tender young Harry discovers a full-length mirror in the attic at Hogwarts, where he's attending school. And this mirror mesmerizes him with what he sees. Instead of his own reflection, he sees that which he most loves, his parents who died when he was still an infant, whom he longed, yearned to see. And he sits there with his gaze affixed on their image in the mirror for the longest while. Only when a sage comes and whispers in his ear, "Be alert, Harry," does he turn aside from the mirror and enables him to begin the journey that was his to take, which includes confronting Voldemort, the Prince of Darkness, the Evil One. Voldemort tempts Harry, saying he can have all the things that he has ever desired, all the things he has ever loved, if he will only join him on the dark side. Harry is tempted with that. And in the pause, as he considers it, Voldemort makes his best pitch by saying, "Harry, there is no good and evil. There is only power and those too weak to seize it." That's a bone-chilling claim that rings in our ears today, doesn't it? For a split second, Harry appears ready to succumb, but then he gathers his courage and turns and renounces Voldemort. He names him as the enemy and screams in his face that he is a liar. And with that, Harry knows the path of goodness onto which he is called. He senses the power he possesses of goodness within him to share it, even when it comes at great cost to him or even to others. I suspect many of you grew up with Harry and Hermione and Ron, or if you didn't, your kids did or grandchildren did. I'm the first to admit that J.K. Rowling has a really creative imagination, puts her in rarefied air with the likes of C.S. Lewis and Tolkien, I think. But then I get to thinking about the plot that she weaves through her series. This boy with the mark on his forehead, a sign that he has special gifts and special work to do. Someone in his story, someone in his life loved him enough to die for him. The battles of cosmic good and evil are lurking all around. A cloud of witnesses are helping Harry plot his course in all of the dangerous times. He gets messages from a bird. All right, it's a snow owl, not a dove, but I'm thinking, this is our story. This is the Christ figure story that we come here and share every single week. And J.K. Rowling is out there making her gazillions on it. And she has a following that will line up at midnight to purchase a book, the last one in the series, 11 million copies sold in the first 24 hours. She is a master storyteller. And if you haven't read the books or seen the films, I encourage you to do so. If not for their high literary quality, then for the theological pearls that they contain, and for the sheer enjoyment of it all. The truth is, my friends, I think Harry Potter is the quintessential Advent character worthy of our reflection today. Oddly enough, here we are on this first season, this first Sunday of Advent in the beginning of the new year, this season of Advent, and we begin by ending. The gospel passage from Mark catapults us to the end of times when Christ will come again. But read from our position now, here in our present, this gospel serves as a sage whispering in our ears, be alert. Darkness looms. You have a purpose in all of this. Advent is this great season of paradox in so many ways. We find ourselves in this northern hemisphere in the darkest time of the year. We are chilled by winter winds. There's a fair bit of rain these days. We find ourselves in a world torn by the forces of evil, a world in which we are all struggling to make sense of the things that haunt us, that stop us in our tracks to say, how could that be? But Advent is also this season of light and life, an expectant season in which we feel things stirring anew. This is a time of quickening when we can sense that something is moving in our midst. It is this season of fecund hope. The hope of the incarnation, the coming of God once more into the world, the birth of Jesus as we know him. And we make our song, O come, Emmanuel, in the fervent hope that God shows up in the darkest of times. And surely we can rejoice in that. But the questions linger for us these days. Can we see ourselves by the light of our Advent candles that flicker against the dark shadows in our midst? Is the commercialization and chaos of our Christmas experience really just a diversion, a mirror of sorts, to show us something that might make us feel better but is always two-dimensional? Despite all the lights and noise of Christmas commerce, our world is still cold and dark and hurting and desperately in need. And Jesus says to us once more this morning, be alert, be awake. You have a purpose. Advent is certainly this season of preparation for Christmas, but it's intended to be so much more. To be honest, there's a lot of make-believing in our story in this season. Make-believing, I think it's a good thing. We're supposedly waiting for the baby Jesus to be born again in Bethlehem, with wise men coming from the east and stinky shepherds lingering about. But if we heed our scriptures today, what we're really waiting for is for the heavens to open and the anointed one of God to come among us with power and great glory, and to say, you have a purpose. After all this time, these centuries of ritualized longing year after year, I suppose we could just take the natural trajectory of existential resignation in the face of it all, or just sheer cynicism. What's the point of it? But I hope we'll resist that inclination with all our might, because I think to go there, to go to weak resignation, or to go to cynicism is just another way of numbing out to the needs of the world that are right here, right now. We enact this Advent longing at this time every year because it helps us be alert in the delay of gratification. Comes a more intense hunger for the feast. And friends, what we are waiting for expectantly is the feast. We are buoyed by hope in it all. We make believe in our pageantry of preparation. so that our senses might be acutely honed, our souls might hum with the music of angels, our hearts might yearn for the gift of Christmas given and received, but all while asking ourselves, what is the hurt I need Christ to heal? And all while we ask ourselves, where is the light of Christ most desperately needed in our world right now? Because that's where Christ will show up. And are we willing to make our way there to see the Christ child born anew in the dark stable of the world's suffering? Perhaps we bear a mark on our foreheads to remind us of the wonderful mysteries of God and how we fit into God's grand design of goodness. You are here for a purpose. Not because we have any special powers necessarily, but that seal on our forehead burns when the darkness looms about. Be alert, we are told, because we have taken a vow to renounce evil, to name the enemy for what it is and resist it with all our might. But in our story, that's not the end. In our story, the mark of the forehead burns in a different way, in a good way, brightly, when God is stirring about. And so here on this morning, our hearts yearn because we know that while the sky is still opaque and silent, something magnificent is stirring. Something great and glorious is about to happen. We hold that hope. We are called into that because we are here for a purpose. And Jesus says, be alert. Be alert.